Good morning and welcome to our podcast. My name is David Pritchard. I'm the head of marketing here at Sintons. I'm joined again today by my colleague Jay Barmer, who is a solicitor in the construction and engineering team here at Sintons. And our podcast today, which will last approximately 10 to 15 minutes, is another in the series of construction and engineering podcasts. And today, Jay is going to talk about liquidated damages following recent case law update. So without any further ado, straight over to Jay. Jay, good morning and over to you.
Thanks, David. Today's podcast deals with the applicability of liquidated damages clauses in construction contracts following some recent developments in the law. In essence, liquidated damages clauses contain pre-agreed damages for a particular breach of contract. In construction contracts, the most common being a failure by the contractor to complete the works by the contractual date for completion. I will discuss two recent decisions, the first and most important being the Supreme Court's highly anticipated judgment in Triple Point Technology Inc. and PTT Public Company Limited, focusing on the applicability of liquidated damages when the works were delayed and the building contract subsequently terminated after the contractual date for completion. Case law of the past decade in relation to this issue has been somewhat inconsistent, and an orthodox approach was slowly emerging from the cases. The liquidated damages could be claimed from the contractual completion date up to the date of termination, but not thereafter. However, when deciding on Triple Point, the Court of Appeal departed from this orthodoxy when it held that the entitlement to liquidated damages fell away on termination. This reintroduced uncertainty as to the enforceability of liquidated damages after termination. The second case is that of EcoWorld, Ballymore Embassy Gardens Company Limited v. Dobler UK Limited, heard in the Technology and Construction Court. This case determined the enforceability of a liquidated damages clause where there was no reduction in the liquidated damages despite the employer taking partial possession of certain parts of the works. So what happened in Triple Point? Triple Point concerns a software contract, although the terminology will be instantly recognisable to anyone used to dealing with a construction contract. In 2013, Triple Point, a US software firm, entered into a contract with PTT Public Company, a commodities trading company based in Thailand, the design, installation, maintenance, and licensing of trading software to assist in PTT's operations. The contract provided that it was subject to English law. The contract was bespoke to the project rather than relying on a standard form due to the complexity of the required software modifications and potential for financial loss to PTT if there were any defects in the works. An overall contract sum was agreed at just under $7 million to be paid in installments. The dates for payment were tied to the completion of 9 milestones. It also provided for liquidated damages to be paid in the event of Triple Point's work being delayed, calculated at a daily rate from the due date for delivery up to the date PTT accepts such work. Work began in March 2013 and soon fell into difficulties. It became apparent that Triple Point had not sufficiently resourced the project, and completion of the first 2 milestones came 149 days late. Triple Point eventually ceased work and demanded payment in order to continue. PTT contended that Triple Point was not entitled to further payments as no further milestones had been met. PTT maintained that Triple Point had wrongfully suspended work and terminated, or purported to terminate, the contract in 2015. Triple Point issued proceedings in the High Court for payment of the alleged outstanding sums. PTT issued a defence and a substantial counterclaim, which included the delay damages. The availability of liquidated damages became one of the principal issues of the case. At first instance, the High Court dismissed Triple Point's claims and held that, amongst the other heads of loss, PTT was entitled to $3.5 million in liquidated damages for the delay prior to termination. The judgment then came to the Court of Appeal, where Triple Point argued that the liquidated damages clause was not engaged, as it was only applicable where work was delayed but subsequently completed and accepted. The core of the argument was that without acceptance, the clause could not apply. The Court of Appeal reviewed multiple authorities on the area and found that these could be categorised into 3 different outcomes. Number 1 was where the liquidated damages clause does not apply upon termination. Number 2 was where the liquidated damages clause applies up to the termination and not thereafter. This was seen as the orthodox position. And finally, number 3, where the liquidated damages clause continued to apply until the works had been completed by a replacement contractor. The Court of Appeal found in favour of Triple Point, relying heavily on a Scottish House of Lords decision from the early 20th century called British Glanstoff. In that case, based on the contractual wording before the House of Lords, the Court held that the liquidated damages clause could not apply where work was not finished. This step away from the orthodox position threw the law on post-termination liquidated damages into uncertainty. PTT subsequently appealed to the Supreme Court. Lady Arden, giving the leading judgment, undertook a careful analysis of the Glanstoff decision and came to a different conclusion on the interpretation of the clause and its subsequent operation. Glanstoff was found to be a case that was decided on its own facts and did not establish any general principle for the interpretation and operation of liquidated damages clauses in other contracts. As such, the Court of Appeal was not required to apply the decision in this case. Instead, the Supreme Court made its own interpretation of the contract in the present case. Quite interestingly, the Supreme Court relied on concepts such as commercial common sense and the accepted function of liquidated damages to assist in its interpretation of the contract before it. The Court of Appeal's interpretation was said to be inconsistent with the commercial reality and the accepted function of liquidated damages, rendering the liquidated damages clause of little value. Ultimately, the Supreme Court found that the parties must have understood and intended that the liquidated damages were to apply up until the termination of the contract. This was the interpretation that made the most commercial common sense, and the fact that such a concept was identified and used to aid the interpretation gives a valuable insight into the willingness of the court to uphold liquidated damages clauses. If anyone was in doubt that the Supreme Court was re-establishing the orthodox approach, Lord Leggett clearly summarised the position at paragraph 86 of his judgment that a liquidated damages clause will apply to any period of delay in completing the work up to the date of termination unless the contract clearly provided otherwise. Those last few words should be a reminder that the first consideration should always be the express wording of the contract. The actual intention of the parties should be clearly captured so as to avoid any uncertainty. It is highly unlikely that a court would interpret a provision to give effect to a commercially accepted position if the wording clearly provides otherwise. Following on from Triple Point, liquidated damages were again an issue when the TCC handed down judgment in Eco World, Ballymore and Dobler UK. This case considered whether a liquidated damages clause was an unenforceable penalty clause where there was no reduction where the employer had taken partial possession of the works. Penalty clauses are unenforceable as a matter of law in England and Wales. Eco World entered into a contract with Dobler, a trade contractor for the design, supply and installation of facade and glazing works at a development in London comprising several buildings or blocks. The works were not divided into sections. Dobler's works were eventually completed in December 2018, some 6 months after an already extended completion date of April 2018. Eco World had already taken partial possession of two blocks in June, although no practical completion certificate was issued. Disputes arose over the final account and Eco World's deduction of liquidated damages at the full rate without any reduction to account for partial possession. The parties launched a series of adjudications, the outcome of which being that Eco World was entitled to liquidated damages from the revised completion date up to the point at which it took partial possession of the works and that liquidated damages were exhaustive. In other words, Eco World had no further right to general damages in respect of the delay. In the TCC, the parties effectively switched their arguments, each taking the case argued by the other in the adjudication, otherwise known as a volte face. It is easy to see why Eco World switched their position. They originally claimed about £574,000 in liquidated damages, calculated using contractual figures of £25,000 per week, capped at 7%. By the third adjudication, Eco World were claiming £2.3 million in general damages for the delay, which would usually be unavailable where the parties had agreed liquidated damages for the same breach. Mr. Justice O'Farrell examined the contractual provisions and found that Dobler was under an obligation to complete all of the works by the date of completion to avoid liability for liquidated damages. The contract also provided that Eco World could take over part of the works prior to practical completion. There was no mechanism for reduction of the liquidated damages if Eco World exercised that right. Applying the test from Cavendish and MacDessy, Mrs. Justice O'Farrell established that the clause was not a penalty because, number one, the provision was negotiated by the parties who had both the benefit of advice from external lawyers. The court should be cautious about any interference in the freedom of the parties to agree commercial terms and allocation of risk in their business dealings. Number two, Eco World had a legitimate interest in enforcing the primary obligation of Dobler to complete the works as a whole, as late completion would expose Eco World to the risk of losing purchasers. And finally, the quantification of general damages would be difficult, and the fixing of liquidated damages avoided that difficulty. Further, neither party argued that the level of liquidated damages was unreasonable or disproportionate to the actual loss. We can see again from this case both the importance of clear drafting to give effect to the intentions of the parties and the reluctance of the court to disapply or strike down a liquidated damages clause. Parties should consider whether sectional completion is appropriate or, if not, whether it is likely that the employer could partially possess the works and what effect this should have on the rate of liquidated damages, and deal with this expressly in the contract. It also serves as warning to parties that are challenging a liquidated damages clause. What was already an uphill struggle might be more so given the recent direction of the courts. And that's everything from me today. So thanks, David.
Thanks, Jay. Very quickly for me, we release webinars, podcasts and blogs on a regular basis, all of which can be found on our website, www.sintons.co.uk, should you wish to take a look. And you can also follow the construction team at Twitter at Sintons_CD. As I usually say at this point, if you'd like to discuss anything Jay's raised today further, please don't hesitate to get in touch with him or a member of the team. Jay can be contacted via telephone 0191-226-7878 or via email j.barmer@sintons.co.uk. That's it from us today. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll speak to you next time. Stay safe, everyone.